Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey guys, it's Johnny, and welcome to episode 116 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I am still in Chiang Mai for another week. Sam is back in the Tampa.
TPA, bro. TPA. Good airport. Yeah. Gotta say that. Shout out to the airport. Not bad.
You know, this is another one of those weeks where I had to ask you before the call, where are you in the world? Because I honestly thought you were still in Chiang Mai. I invited you to dinner, actually tonight. I was like, hey, do you wanna meet up some of the guys for Six Finger Sushi tonight? And like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to be anywhere near Chiang Mai.
Yeah, I span the globe on that one. That's about as far as in the world as you can fly, Chiang Mai to Florida. But you know what? This time of year, it's almost exactly the same. The weather, sublime here, 60s in the night, 80 and sunny in the daytime. So it's a pretty nice place to land.
Okay, so you're not in Chicago where it's like negative 40 or something. Insane.
Yeah, my flight was supposed to be through Chicago.
And I'm assuming that the weather was so bad, you just couldn't do it?
Yeah, they rerouted me through Dallas, but because of that, I had to stop a night over in Narita. And Narita, for any of those who have not stopped there, is an absolutely fantastic place to spend 24 hours. It's one of my favorite places to do a stopover. Man, is it good. It's a little bit of a travel secret that I don't really share with too many people, but give it a shot.
Where's Narita? I never heard of it.
Narita is a place. There's two big airports in Tokyo or outside of Tokyo, and Narita is one of them. But almost no one stops there. But if you actually get out at the airport and go into Narita, which is like a 4-minute taxi ride or just a quick metro ride, you are in this great little Japanese city town. It's more of a town, I suppose. But it has all these amazing little shops and sushi bars, coffee spots, great temple park. I mean, it's awesome. So whenever I fly back and forth from Asia to the U.S., either way, I try to stop a night in Narita to break up the flight and just get a little bit of that Japanese culture.
That is cool. I thought I had saw that you were in Narita, and I was like, we're not in Narita, but in Japan in general. And I was like, where are you? What are you doing?
That's what I was doing, buddy. Sushi, and getting ready to record for the Bob Sapp episode.
It's going to be a good one. I think I saw it on your Instagram. What is your Instagram, Sam?
I'm Sam Marks. Letter I, letter M, Sam Marks. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's it.
And I am Johnny FDK. If you guys want to follow both of us to see our crazy travel journeys, but that is not the point of today's episode, even though it is fun to catch up on where we've been traveling. This week's episode is going to be a very exciting one because I grew up watching this guy on TV. I guess I wasn't that young, but I was in my 20s. I was training Muay Thai. I was living in Phuket. And I wanted to be a kickboxer or MMA fighter or something. And I remember watching this guy just dominate the screen, you know, like, and it was, so if you guys don't know who Bob Sapp is, take a second to look him up. Go on YouTube, type in Bob Sapp, watch one of his highlights or one of his fights, and you'll understand like what we are talking about. This guy is he's surreal. He's not like a normal human being. He's like if somebody created a cartoon version of a fighter and then he became a real person.
Well, funny enough, he's got a sponsorship deal with Line, you know, Line Messenger, which is massive in Asia, that they've created an entire sticker set for Bob. And when I was connected with Bob online and he was sitting there sending me his stickers, I'm like, wow, these are just great. So I went and bought them for like a buck or something so you can get those. But he is like a cartoon figure and he is larger than life. He is, I think, 6'7", 6'8", massive, massive dude. And he's got a six pack. He's like 45 years old now. He's still got a six pack. But an entertainer at the core, fighter at the heart, and really, really interesting guy that we're going to hear a lot about on this episode.
Yeah. Definitely. He's fought some big name kickboxers, Ernesto Hoost, a lot of Japanese guys that if you guys are into kickboxer or MMA, you guys definitely know who he is. It's just like in general, I remember just seeing him as like the guy to watch. And the funny thing is, I didn't care if he won or lost. I just wanted to see him fight. And I think that was his niche that he kind of carved out. I'm sure we'll hear a little bit more about it on the episode. But for you guys who aren't into, you know, fighting or MMA or kickboxing, and you're wondering what is this former or current, actually he's still fighting, what is this, you know, the superstar fighter going to teach me about finance? And what does that have to do with my life? What does that have to do with investing? I think it's actually going to be really interesting. I mean, I think anyone with a job that doesn't have a fixed income, you're not working a 9-to-5 with a salary, you have, you know, you might be an entrepreneur, you might be a business owner, someone who has either, you know, big amounts of money coming in once in a while, but it's not a guaranteed monthly income. We're going to be talking a lot about budgeting and how to, you know, not, you know, retire broke, because there's a lot of people, especially in Bob Sapp's situation, where they're used to getting flown around, you know, business class or first class, you know, be put up in 5-star hotels, you know, ride around in limos with champagne. And then all that's usually paid for by the fight promotion, but, and they get used to that lifestyle. But what do you do when you go home for those 4 months or 6 months or even a year when you're not fighting, not getting that big paycheck, and you have to pay for your own expenses?
Absolutely. And I think there's a lot of parallels to entrepreneurship too, just in the ways that you generally make money in tranches, just like prize fighting and a lot of athletes as well. So I think this will be an interesting episode. I know Bob's excited to come on the show. And Johnny, let's stay tuned afterwards and have some takeaways.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to talk. So keep keep listening and enjoy this episode with Bob Sapp.
Welcome back, Bob, Beast, Boss. Welcome to the show, Bob Sapp.
All right. Well, no, you got to say it right. It's Bob the Beast.
I was using a comma. I was using Bob, comma, Beast, comma, Boss, comma, Bob Sapp. Good stuff. Where you at, Bob?
So I am right now, I am back in the United States, right? Loving it right around here in Washington State.
Washington State? Oh, man. Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
It's got to be pretty cold and miserable this time of year.
It's okay. You know, I mean, it's kind of a, I think it's about 60 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's no too cold, no too hot, but, you know, it's not normal.
Fair enough. Well, it's no Thailand weather this time of year, but nevertheless, not too shabby. I know Thailand's looking forward to having you back and getting some of the new initiatives you're working on rolling over here, as am I.
Yes. Oh, man. Thailand is absolutely fantastic for the Beast this year. I mean, it's wonderful. They've really opened up everything to me. So, you know, I'm looking forward to enjoying more of culture of Thailand. I'm looking forward to learning more of how they run their fights out there and how they run, you know, just their everyday lives. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Cool, man. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about what you're up to at the end of the podcast. I just want to, like, you're such an interesting dude. We've had the chance to hang out some up in northern Thailand, do a little Muay Thai training and smash a bunch of sushi and sake. So good times. Or I was drinking sake. I think you were on the green tea, you healthy dude, you.
Yes.
But I want to just give, like, the listeners who, a lot of people are familiar with you from MMA, a lot of the fights you've been in Japan and around the world and as an entertainer, but you got a pretty interesting background going back to college and military. I was hoping you could just clue everyone in to a little bit of that.
Okay. Yeah. So, I was played at the University of Washington, and that's in Washington State. I was an offensive lineman. I later went on to be a third round draft pick in the NFL. And then after I got injured in the NFL, I went to WCW, World Championship Wrestling. And there was the ones with Hulk Hogan and those, they were on TNT. Right after that, they got bought out by WWF, which is now WWE. So they kind of went bankrupt. They got bought out, and that left me high and dry. So I was delivering dead bodies from the hospital to the morgue in Atlanta, Georgia. And I received a phone call from Japan, and they asked me to come and be a professional fighter in their K-1 league. At that time, K-1 was worth about $300,000. I took K-1 to about a sum of over $300 million in 8 months. So I made the cover of Wall Street Journal, Time Magazine, and of course now that is the most. I ended up doing a real popular fight 2006, where over 54 million people tuned in to watch me fight. That ended up making 54 million people watch me fight Akebono. That's the world record. And that, of course, gave me the most popular foreigner in Japan, in the history of Japan and on the history of the television. And now, December 31st, you can actually, that's their fighting day in Japan.
Gosh.
And that's the reason why everyone fights that.
Yeah, what fight was that? What fight was that, the 54 million?
That was me versus Akebono in 2006. So in comparison, at that time, American Idol was really popular. And that finale of American Idol had 25 million people watch. And now you've got just Bob the Beast Sapp fighting Akebono. And I put in 54 million. Incredible.
Damn. Beast. Is that when you got the name Beast, or were you already called Beast at that point?
Yeah, they already called me the Beast, but, you know, that was that really took over then. And then at that time, obviously, it was an amazing time to go through Japan. It still is, quite frankly, for myself, but it's just an amazing deal.
My gosh. Well, before Japan called you, had you ever been in any professional fights or any fights? I know you were in WWE, sort of fighting.
Well, I did a tough man fight versus William the Refrigerator Perry on FX. So that was the scope of my little fighting capabilities.
Yeah. So what do you feel when you go into a fight like that? Like, are you full of butterflies like most of us would be, or are you just calm?
Oh no, you're nervous, you're excited, you've got no idea it's a total rush.
Yeah. God,
it's in the lights, and I mean, you can hear everyone screaming your name. You can see people. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, I would gas out in the first 20 seconds. I'd be too excited, too nervous. I would just go full in, and I would be flat out huffing and puffing on the ground 20 seconds later.
Oh man, it was crazy.
At what point did you consider? I see you as basically a fighter and an entertainer. And at what point in your life did you transition to, like, when did you actually feel like, damn, I'm Bob, I'm the entertainer. Like, I'm an entertainer. I'm bringing these crowds in, not necessarily just because I'm a fighter, but because I just know how to stir the audience.
Well, it got to be pretty crazy, okay? Because in fighting, you know, it was. I think at the time I was like 10-2 or 10-1, and nobody was calling me anymore. I was not making any, and, you know, there was. I was supposed to be this big, tough, awesome fighter, and I was not getting recalls to be received. And for the Eagle wise, you may think that that's great, but let me tell you, when you see your bank account dwindling because nobody's fighting you, and you see everybody else who's going on, and, you know, they're losing fights, but they're still getting fights, so they're still getting paid, so they're enjoying their life, you know, and here you are, this undefeated fighter, this really strong fighter, and you're able to get any fights. That really starts to take a dawn on you, you know? So when I found out that, you know, as soon as I started, I ended up getting some losses, and I started getting so many calls back, and I was like, wow, I'm not even winning anymore, and I'm still able to get, now making a living more so than when I was winning. It ended up telling me something about that situation, and it ended up telling me that, you know, I am now a pure entertainer. They're no longer caring whether I'm winning or losing. They're just paying to show up to see me in the ring and to do my thing. So they wanted just to see, you know, what kind of, you know, quirky things I can come up about the opponent, you know, how fast can I go in there and see if I can knock them out in 10 seconds? And if no, they're okay, because they just want to see me do it again. You know, this all.
Oh my God. So they actually, it was almost like people wanted to see the big man fall.
Yes. Oh yeah. You know, and you know, it's so funny, you know, I'll get people that come in there to see me lose, and to show that, you know, see, he no longer has it. Look at how big he is. And I mean, it's the funniest thing. You know, but it's really an enjoyable time. I'm telling you, it's really quite enjoyable, because, you know, I mean, these countries, they'll fly me out there. They'll do everything in the way, first class accommodations all the way. And, you know, you get to meet some wonderful people and get introduced to some great culture. So it's fantastic.
I can't imagine any place that would be a neater experience than doing that in Japan. Just thousands and thousands and thousands of Japanese, probably girls fainting in the audience, everyone taking photos, and then just the culture is just magnificent.
Yes, it's great. I mean, definitely, you know, you're always going to go out and eat some top-notch dinners afterwards, and always have some dessert with your sushi. It's very nice. and Japan.
Yeah, speaking of Japan, so I just saw it wasn't really like a big production, but it looked like Mayweather just fought over in Japan in like a non-official boxing bout, and he won. But like, what's that all about? Is that just like a promotion for a Japanese fight league?
No, so that was Ryzen. And so, you know, they just do anything combat sports related. So, you know, it was their turn, and that lets you know. What it does let you know is that, hey, there is some money out there that they're doing, because when Floyd Mayweather can come in there, they can handle the recruitment of something of a Floyd Mayweather, and you have somebody that's transcending into all different types of combat sports from his sport. It shows you that he's a master at what he's doing, and it shows you that, you know, he's also going overseas and extending out to see all these different countries and to explore more. So I think it's great.
Yeah, so I think Floyd's now maybe 41. I think you're pretty close there, Bob. Floyd's still got a little fight in him.
I got a little spunk in the trunk, so to speak. But you know, it's absolutely crazy. He's 41. I'm approaching that good 45 years old, and it is absolutely amazing. So yeah, we've got to all do the dash for the cash. We've got to save up for our next turning of the page or next aspect in life.
That's right. Yeah, I like it. Well, one more question on fighting. Of all the fights that you've been in, what's the hardest you've ever been hit? Whether it's a leg kick or a punch, what's the hardest?
Ooh, low kick for sure. You got to give that to Ernesto Hoost, man. After that fight, I could no walk for like 6 months. It was absolutely incredible. So
I know,
he gave me a big thing of sciatica, man.
Oh God. I got to relook at that fight. It's kind of my go-to when I'm sitting in at an outside restaurant in Thailand, just having a little bit of pad thai, throwing a good old-fashioned Bob Sapp fight on YouTube. Compliments the Singhai very well. I know the Krokop fight. You took a couple big shots. I think didn't he break your eye orbit or something?
Yeah, he did. He ended up punching me right directly on the eyeball that blew out my orbital socket in my eye. It blew it completely clean out. Absolutely incredible. Really, really big hit.
All right. Well, hopefully you don't take too many more of those going. I like this transition you're making, Bob. I think it's a good transition.
Oh yes. I mean, and you know, I think my face and my teeth appreciate it more.
Yes, good stuff. The face of a fighter. What can you do? It's what you signed up for, I suppose. So I want to talk a little bit about, you know, travel. I heard that you said you traveled to 155 countries. And I think for the average listener out there, they might not even know that there are 155 countries in the whole world.
Oh, because, yeah. Something like 195, 196 or something like that. Countries.
So, I think once you get over 100, you got to start going places that you don't really want to go to. They're not exactly on your radar to make a journey to go see. So you know, what's that experience been like? Are most of those 155 on business, or is that just you traveling and jet setting?
It's both, you know. So I mean, the majority of it is business related. When you talk about it, you start running out of different countries. Yes, you start to go to more and more exotic and some dangerous countries. So whether, you know, I've been to North Korea, and of course I just got back from Uganda. In North Korea it was pretty good. There's nothing too scary, very clean, definitely a different culture. But when you go to Uganda, when I went to Uganda, Africa, I mean, when I got extorted and my friend kidnapped, it was just really absolutely amazing to see this type of stuff going on. So, you know, when you're outside of the United States, particularly for myself, or when you're out there traveling, you've got to be careful and you've got to be aware of all the different surroundings. But, you know, it's just to see the differences, you know what I mean? Wow, this is North Korea. Wow, this is Uganda. You know, I was in Serbia and, you know, the Ukraine, Russia, you know, you name all these countries that I've been to. It's just amazing to see the different feel for environment, entertainment, culture, all of that stuff. It's incredible.
Yeah, and I'm curious how the airlines fit you on the plane, because you're a huge dude. So you must always have to fly business or first class, because there ain't no way you're taking even two economy seats. Ain't going to fit Bob Sapp.
Oh, no, you right on that. And I'll tell you what, they will charge you twice.
They will, and they have.
They charge me two seats, man. So, Yeah, I'm cursed to do the business class, but it's okay.
Yeah, I was honestly nice even some of the business class seats. I was just on Qantas down to Australia in business class, and I, you know, you think Australians are pretty big people flying mostly Australians down there. I was like, the business class seats were pretty small, and I was thinking before this interview, mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't think Bob would fit in that seat. I really don't think he'd fit in that seat.
Nope.
Now you got to buy two business class seats. Oh man, tough life. Well, 155 countries. You previously moved to Guatemala. I thought that was really interesting. And I feel like you've been able to, in a way, throughout your life, take advantage of kind of location arbitrage, where you've been fighting in first world countries like Japan, good economies, assumingly making money from those countries or getting paid from those countries. But you've also been able to live in some, I guess you can call them third world countries, but places where a lot less expensive. So you can keep your living costs down, presumably, while collecting paychecks from strong economies. Is that been a strategy of life, or was the Guatemala thing something different?
No, it's definitely a strategy. Okay, what you want to do is you want to go to wherever you're at, and you can get treated the best, where you mm-hmm. can absolutely, where your dollar can make the most for you, where you can have the most fun. And so, you know, and in particular, the United States can be kind of expensive. You know, and so if you want to explore out and go out and just in general to have a new feel, new aura, it's great. In Guatemala, you're right. You hit that right on the nail on the head. I was out in a small farming community. It was fantastic. Wonderful, wonderful place. I definitely recommend going there for some of the people just in the city. Some of the cities, it can be quite dangerous, you know, the crime and stuff. But when you're out in the what they say, off of the tourist trail, where there's a lot of agricultural areas and stuff, it can be fantastic. I mean, it's as far as the expenses, cutting down all the expenses. Yes, that's fantastic for retirement. Yes, it's fantastic. You know, but I would like to say it's probably best suited for retirement for really people who are really retiring. It's no place I would like bring kids or anything to. Something.
Yeah, that makes sense. Did you make it to Lake Atitlan while you're there?
Yeah, Lake Atitlan. Yes.
Jacques Cousteau went there at some point and said and wrote in his book that it was the closest place to Eden on Earth. And I was like, wow, that's a big statement. So when I saw that, I had to do a trip down to Guatemala to see the lake, and it is incredibly mm-hmm. beautiful. Yeah.
Yes. So yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, I'm never ever. Just the lake and all the beautiful volcanoes, and some of the volcanoes are still active. It's just mm-hmm. incredible.
Oh, good stuff. You know? So I want to transition into kind of what you're working on now and some of your future plans. But first, I just wanted to see, you and I have had a couple of discussions just about investing and finance, and you know, the way that you think about these things, I think is awesome. You know, to put that picture on top of what we already know about Bob Sapp is this incredible entertainer and MMA fighter. But you got some interesting thoughts on, you know, planning for retirement and how you structure your investments, and also on credit. I was just hoping you could think of a few that kind of pop to your mind when you think about money or planning for retirement, and, you know, share some details on your philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, sure. So I've listened to Ramsey down here. So what they basically believe in, what we preach, is just to do your very best to no longer be using loans or credit cards. So I don't do any loans. I don't do any credit cards myself. I use just debit card and just cash. So I'm always able to keep up with myself. I know every play, you know, if I have the money, I'm going to get it. If I don't have the money, I'm no going to get it. And it's just that simple. And traveling around the world, and that's where you can really start to take advantage of these currency, the strong dollar, mm-hmm. so to speak, you know. So that's one thing that's fantastic with that. When to keep the philosophy, why no credit cards? It's very simple. It's just credit cards end up complicating your life. You end up sometimes buying too many things, and because, you know, the money happens to be there, you're no longer budgeting. You're just kind of, you know, that friction is no there. You know, when you're using that credit card, it just seems like it's just water. But, you know, when it's cash, and you can feel that cash come out, you can feel that pain. And so I like to get acquainted with that in the feel and say, if I don't like to have this pain, then I need to really cut down my expenses. And so it really helps you budget quite naturally, keeping down your expenses and stuff like that. Well, that's one good thing.
And then if you were going to buy a house or a condo somewhere, would you ever do that with a mortgage, or would you always try to do that with cash?
Nope, I'm doing that with cash. Absolutely. I'm no into doing any loans and stuff like that, in particularly because it's just, you know, when you're an athlete, you've got to be able to know where your money's coming from and how you're going to handle your money. And if you're going to go off and you're going to get wrapped up in that loans, you're never going to know when you're actually going to retire because you're still paying off your house. You've got to cut down every expense as an athlete. You have to have your house paid for. You have to have your car paid for. You have to have no credit cards, and you have to have everything else in the bank for a rainy day and for your retirement. And that's all you have to do is just keep stacking that year after year, day after day, day after day, day after day. You can then say, okay, I want a budget for my family. I want a budget for college. I want a budget for a vacation. And you can then do all those things. But there's no vacations. There's no kicking it. There's no fun until you've paid off, till you've at least actually saved up enough for your house. Did you know that when you pay for your house in cash, you get about 30 to 40% off? Did you know that? It's incredible.
No. Yeah, is that been your experience in different countries or specifically one?
Specifically the United States. Different countries. Some of these countries, it's not even worth even buying a place. You know, like when I was in Guatemala, I'm building a all sub-sustainable house, so it's all out of tires and trash, and it looks very nice. But when you start going through, when you're looking at some renting, like renting your place in other countries, yeah, that's no problem. I mean, in Guatemala, the rent was something like $40 a month.
Oh my gosh,
so it's really no problem. Yeah,
that's like renting a palm tree in the USA for a month.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man. So wow. It's great.
Yeah, you know? It's interesting to hear you talk about, like, as a fighter and as an entertainer. I almost feel like the planning is similar to that of an entrepreneur, because I know as like an entrepreneur, you don't necessarily have a transferable skill. Like if you build a business and you sell it and then you start over, you're starting over really from scratch. Where let's say if you're a financial advisor on Wall Street, you know you can go in every single year and you can collect a paycheck and you can switch firms and you can collect a paycheck. But as an entrepreneur, you don't. And as a fighter or an athlete, you might not either, right? It's the same. You could get injured and that could be it. So the planning is a lot different than that of, say, a mechanic or a financial advisor or anything else like that. And that was actually interesting to hear you say. How do you plan for retirement? Are you investing in stocks, bonds, real estate, anything like that that is part of your future plan?
Yeah, I do mutual funds, anything over 1.5 beta. So I like to be alpha. So, you know, I do what some would be considered would be a very high risk. And let me backtrack now for the mutual funds that are very high risk and all of that. I must say that, you know, I've been doing that since I was 17 years of age, and I'm now 45. So I've been very comfortable with that risk, that level of risk in the risk assessment, which really is no risk when it's just cash, right? So what you need to do, what I do is to keep my expenses down. So what does that mean? I shop at Goodwill and secondhand used stores, and I use pawn shops quite a bit. So you'll not see me buying a lot of things in the mall. You'll not see me doing a lot of those things. You will just see me occasionally. You'll see me buying some things, but nothing huge. You know, I really keep those things down to the bare minimums.
I only see one issue with that, and that is that there are very few people as big as Bob Sapp giving clothes to Goodwill. So, are you like squeezing into a male medium size shirts?
Hey. You know what's so funny is sometimes I got the really differently sized structures, you know, really big fat people in there that use the shirts. Mm-hmm. And man, some of them, and so some of those, when they get shrunken down, they fit me pretty good. But sometimes they'll be even bigger than me. They'll be like an 8X or something. And oh man, I sometimes even have to put those back. I always laugh. I'm like, okay, I'm not that big, guys.
Yeah, yeah. We got to go shopping together sometime. That'll be fun. I'll get a kick out of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff, man. Well, thanks for sharing some of that. I think that's really helpful to see the mindset of athletes, especially someone like yourself that, you know, we see on TV, we see it doing the entertainer, but like it's what's happening in the back office. How are you planning for things? So that's really interesting.
Yes. And you know, it really helps to have people that are actually have the same reference or your same mind point in what you're doing. And so that's why I get that with Chris Hogan when I'm listening to his podcast. And we're actually friends, so I communicate with him quite a bit. So when he's talking about there, and Chris Hogan is the guy who wrote the Everyday Millionaire and and Retire Inspired, and he's a number one selling author, and he also writes about how to do your retirement and stuff like that. So, you know, just to listen to him and to go over his philosophy and to discuss with him how to make changes in your life, it's fantastic. And so I encourage everyone to actually listen to it, not only just athletes.
Great, yeah. We'll share a link to that in the show notes. And the other one that you said you listened to was Dave Ramsey?
Dave Ramsey, yeah. So Dave Ramsey and Chris Hogan, they're both kind of business partners and friends. So they've all worked together. So they're intertwined, the both of them. So yes, Dave Ramsey and Chris Hogan, both of those, I recommend that to everybody, because that really helps you no matter what country it helps you on the basics of life.
Good stuff. So let's talk about a little bit what's going on with Bob Sapp in the future, some of the new initiatives you're working on and some of the life plans, because I think it's pretty exciting stuff. So, you know, you're coming back to Thailand. I know you've been working on a few big things. I've been trying to push you into doing something else, but we'll put that one on the back burner for the time being. You know, what's cooking, buddy? What's up? What's up in Bob Sapp's camp right
now?
Well,
I'll tell you, this is fantastic. Well, the beast. Taking over Thailand.
Oh,
so,
no.
So you're going to see the Bob Sapp Entertainment. Yes, Bob Sapp Entertainment. So I'm actually working with another, this MMA group called K Energy, and they've hired me on, and we're working to run a new kind of little MMA fight league out of Thailand and expanding that into Japan, the United States, and China and Guatemala. So, and I believe India now. So, I mean, we've in Russia, we've had all these countries that have been calling us to do all this stuff. So finally, we've got it ready. We've got it together, and we're going to take those first steps here very soon during the month of February. And then you're just going to see it. It should really go quite well.
And what is this more of like an entertainment promotion company, or is it actually setting up the, you know, the full fights and managing fighters?
You're going to see that it's both. It's all incorporated. So, you know, it's all encompassing. You're going to have the fights. You're going to have the entertainment, which is more than fights. That's just dancing and music and songs. And you're going to see, you know, you're going to see all of it. You know, we're putting it all together so that everybody can really get a better feel for how do you go beyond this just MMA where you have two strangers and they're fighting and there's really no crowd participation and everyone's just staring at the big LED screen because, you know, they can't really see anything through a cage and all that kind of stuff. So we've taken that out of there and we've made it a really big, big, big place. And a really, we've taken that out of here and done a really good quiet. My dog's going crazy here. Get quiet. So, yes.
That sounds like a small dog, Bob. I thought you had a big dog.
Yes, it is. I do, but this small one, he's mad at the big dog because the big dog is over here smelling my sandwiches and stuff. So it's pretty funny.
I bet that dog eats a lot of food. That dog has to weigh 250 pounds. Talk about a beast. That's a beast.
he's a big boy, man. He is a big boy. And you know, we're gonna get a little glimpses of him coming back and forth here because he's gonna be one of the like mascots for this fighting league. So
I can just see a little tiger on the audience with this thing walking by and thinking she's only got moments to survive.
I know, because this dog, I was just walking him down the street today, and you know, five cars pulled over and they were just, can we please take a picture of your dog? So he he gets a ton of attention every time he goes out.
Yeah, I know you're also a fan of the exotic animals. Any plans in the future to to have a zoo in your backyard?
Oh, well, you know, we're going to have a couple of them. So right now in Thailand, we're looking at getting a couple of pet water buffaloes, some meerkats, and maybe a couple of monkeys. For Guatemala, it's still, you know, the big exotic cats. We still like the big lions and the, you know, that's actually the only ones we're going to keep, lions and pumas out there. So still always loving exotic cats.
Do lions and pumas get along? Because I could see the pumas being gentle, but I don't feel like the lions would play nice with the pumas.
Yeah, as long as they're raised up together, it's fine.
Okay.
But, you know, if they're not raised up together, then they start fighting.
That makes sense.
You know.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Entertaining stuff. So one last question just regarding, you know, I've seen you do some almost like mentorship, but consulting maybe in a way on helping athletes kind of embody that entertainer aspect, almost like what you said. Well, very much in line with what you said about how you had a transformation in your fighting career when you learned to incorporate entertainment and not just raw fighting skills, even if that meant, you know, basically surrendering some of your skills to make the fights more exciting.
Yes.
You know, how do you see people developing that skill? Like, what skills separate an athlete from an entertainer? I almost feel like, I don't know, like, what would you call McGregor? Is he an entertainer or a fighter, or how do you separate the two?
He's an entertainer. McGregor's an entertainer. A real hardcore fighter, and you'll see him, especially overseas. You'll not see too many over in the United States because they primarily are just watching Bellator and UFC. Okay, but if you saw some of these other fights that are around the world and outside of the United States, you would see some real hardcore fighters. I mean, no joke. They're going to come in there and they're really going to get it done. Now, here's what a real hardcore fighter is going to do. He's not going to have any of those tattoos and stuff that you see. He'll maybe have some cauliflower, some scars, because for him, the scars are his tattoos and those cauliflower ears are his battle marks. They're showing you who he's about. He's going to come in there. He's just going to wear right through you. And he'll do that for a dollar. He'll do it for $1, $2, $3, or even $5. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's really the small amount of money for him is okay, because he just wants to fight. That's what some of these hardcore fighters you've got doing there. And there's just no money in that. I'm sorry. You know, I mean, that's just terrible. Okay. You're just getting beat up and you're just happy just because you can beat people up and you're getting beat up. Well, that's just going to wind you in a very nightmare place real soon. Okay. Now, when you want to be a professional and really care about your more of the entertainment, you're going to start taking your opponent's picture and maybe putting it in two pieces of bread and saying, I'm going to eat you up just like it's lunchtime, or maybe it's like snack, but that's okay because I'm going to eat you all. You know, people say, you know, something like this, you know, you're going to keep bringing it back and forth and going and just playing with it, you know, mm-hmm. and that's what the entertainment aspect does. It builds on the audience participation and how much they love you or how much they hate you, and which either one is okay. Okay. Either one of them is okay. You know, they can pay to see you get knocked out or they can pay to see you win. And that's okay. Cause as long as they're coming to the show, and that's what you want to do. You want to be able to always keep that in mind when you're doing any of this fighting stuff, because it's just, if you're just going to go in there for the fights and just say, hey, you know, I beat this person up, you've got to remember, you know, these records are only kept online and they're kept on maybe in the fans' eyes, but there's other than that, there's no records that you can actually keep in this.
It's so true, because you look at these Muay Thai fighters in Thailand and they're just animals, and I think they would compete very well in the UFC with their skill set. Who's the Thai fighter? Sadai? San Chai. I watched this guy San Chai fight, and he's like 36. He fights every 2 weeks, and he's a machine. He's just so far above the level of so many fighters, even in Thailand. But I bet he's fighting for like nothing, for like a couple thousand bucks a fight or something. So in that regard, he's, you know, he's not wealthy. He's probably closer to broke. But if you, it seems like there's a huge business. If you could take someone like that with his skill sets and teach him to be an entertainer and launch him in, you know, the UFC or any of these other, these other stages, that you could quickly turn a fighter that's making $2,000 or $3,000 into a fighter that's making millions with a little bit of coaching.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Exactly right. And so, I mean, and they just need to, they just need the direction, and that's what I do, and that's what K Energy does, and that's what the Bob Sapp Entertainment does. So
yeah,
you know, we're here just to do that with those guys.
Good stuff. Well, when are we going to hear more about Bob Sapp Entertainment? When are we coming to Thailand? When's the first fight? Especially when's the first dancing? Because I want to come for that. But I'm looking forward to hearing more. When can we expect more? Or when can we expect it to be officially live here?
Okay, officially, well, we're looking at February 23rd. I will get you more information, obviously, within these next and upcoming weeks for the show in Thailand. That will launch off everything. So let's see how the show in Thailand does, and I'll give you all that information as it gets closer and we have more of it readily available. We're just now finishing up signing the different, different television contracts and sponsorships. So it should be official quite soon.
Good stuff, Bob. We're looking forward to having you back. Looking forward to seeing you again here in Southeast Asia. Yeah. But enjoy your time out in Washington. Yeah. Maybe take a couple skis down the bunny slopes. Are you much of a skier?
No, I got size 18 shoes, though, so I should definitely be sloping sometime.
Yeah. You don't even need skis. You just go down barefoot. those big paddles.
Abominable snowman.
That's right. All right, Bob. Thanks for coming on, man. We're looking forward to sharing this. Take care and good luck with all of your future stuff. As soon as you get more information on Beast Entertainment and the upcoming event, let us know. We'll push it out to everyone. Yeah. We have a fairly big following in Thailand, and I'm sure a lot of people would look forward to attending and participating in any way they can. So, all right, brother. Take care of yourself. We'll catch up next time. Stay away from those exotic cats.
Love it.
Boom. And that was Bob the Beast Sapp. It's great having him on.
All 400 pounds of him.
Yeah.
In your face.
It's crazy. I think he officially weighs in sometimes at 320 because that might be like the limit of fighting. But he definitely walks around closer to 400 pounds.
He says he can still get his body fat down to about 8-9%, which I think is insane if that's even close to being true. Because I just did my body fat and I'm like 20%, and I thought I was going to be like 10. But he's got a six pack. It's crazy. He's got a six pack and he can still bend straight over and put his head between his legs. Like, you've never seen the flexibility on a guy this big before.
Yeah, it's crazy. He is an athlete. He really is. I mean, and he's found a great niche where, I mean, like, here's the thing is, I think he just found his niche where he's like, well, I can just fight in Japan where people are like, you know what? They want to see me fight. They want to see me entertain. They don't care if I have a perfect record. They don't care, you know, if I make weight. Like, I can basically just do what I want to do and enjoy my life and be able to be just dominant in this niche and just get paid for it.
I thought it was really interesting what he said about how when he started to lose, he got more calls back than when he was winning. And it just goes to show you the value in being an entertainer. And I think also we talked a little bit about like McGregor and stuff, but how McGregor can just drive so much views and subscribers and everything else because, I mean, yeah, he's a pure fighter too, but he's really found a way to crack the entertainment side of things, and that's certainly brought lots of dollars to his name.
Yeah, and that's what it is. I mean, let's say in boxing, for example, you know, for the average person, how many boxers can you name? You know, everyone can name Floyd Mayweather, Mike Tyson, you know, maybe a handful of other boxers, and especially if you ask like current boxers, nobody knows. Like very, very few people know, you know, three current boxers. But everybody in the world, even if you are not a fight fan, you know the name Floyd Mayweather because he is such a big promoter. And that's and here's the kind of from a finance point of view, it is insane how little the undercards get paid on like even a big Mayweather fight or like just a normal fight without a big headliner. They get paid almost nothing. Like, I mean, just peanuts. And then how much freaking money a big fight like a Mayweather or Pacquiao fight makes. I mean, it's hundreds of millions of dollars sometimes. It's like literally a zero or zero sum game. It's like zero or 100 million, and that's it.
Yeah, just like in startups, buddy.
Yeah, it really is. And you know what's really cool is I think you know Bob really found his niche because, for example, let's say he wanted to fight the UFC, he couldn't. First, the weight limit is 265 pounds. And I don't think if you saw off one of his legs, he can make that, you know? And then second, it's really, really competitive. I mean, if you don't have a near perfect record, you're not going to make it in the UFC. You know, you have to be like 10 and 0 or like 9-1 to make it in the UFC. And if that was his only way of, you know, fighting or making money, it just wouldn't work out. But it really just shows that no matter what your skill is or what your niche is, you just have to find your unique set of abilities and kind of figure out, like, let me break the rules, bend the rules, find a different market, and let's see where I'm wanted, where I can make money.
Yeah, I think this is also really interesting to get inside the head of an athlete and a fighter, but you know, there's this massive world of sports, and almost all of these guys and gals are finishing by the time they're, you know, late 20s, 30s. If in some cases they can stretch it to like Bob Sapp, you know, into the early mid 40s. But all of them at some point have to make a transition out of that into something else. I mean, most of them don't just go straight into retirement. They then have to transition from sports into something else. And I think it's interesting to see how Bob has planned for his transition and his retirement. And I'm sure, you know, this is something that's going through all sports players and athletes, you know, minds as they're coming up on the end of their career in sports, and you know, how to make that transition. I'm sure it's got to be scary for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's so smart that Bob is budgeting, you know, and he lives, you know, a simple life. He takes advantage of location arbitrage, because the thing is, especially while he was making a ton of money, he could have easily just lived in the US somewhere and just, you know, spent all of it and just had nothing to show for it. But he was smart of saying, you know what? I like Guatemala. You know, I like Thailand. Let me spend my off time places like this where the cost of living is a lot lower. I'm not stressed about when the next fight is. I can save money. You know, I can enjoy good weather. And I haven't heard of that many fighters doing that.
Me either. That's what I mean. When I met Bob, I was like, this guy is just so interesting. He walks right up to you, says hi, and starts talking about everything. And I'll tell you what, he's a super smart guy. We talked a lot about finance over like dinner. You know, he's somewhat reserved, so I didn't want to pull too much out of him on the podcast. But he's a really, really smart guy, and he's got a really interesting view on business. And I think there's a lot of opportunities that that are going to be coming out in the Bob Sapp name, maybe in our home country now, Johnny, Thailand.
Yeah, he kind of briefly alluded to it. It sounds like it's still kind of early on, where they're still looking for sponsors. They're still looking to kind of put it all together. But it sounds like, from what he said, that they are going to create a MMA production in Thailand, where Muay Thai is super popular. There's Muay Thai fights, you know, almost every night. It's all over the TV. But MMA has been a bit hard to crack in Thailand, at least, you know, locally. It sounds like he's going to use his name and his fame and his network to create, you know, I don't know if it's going to be called Bob Sapp MMA, or it's just going to be like, let's say, Thailand MMA, and then Bob Sapp's going to be a big name in it. But I think that's going to be cool.
I'll tell you what, he's a good guy. I really want to appreciate him for coming on the show. I think that will hopefully be entertaining for everyone. I'll tell you what, ever since in Thailand, I've been watching Bob Sapp fight videos over some pad Thai. It's the perfect complement to a quick Thai dinner.
Yeah, and you know, it was awesome. I think the first time I saw you with him, you posted a photo of you at the Muay Thai gym with him. Did you spar him?
No. So he does. He's kind of like, I wouldn't say he's training. He goes in there and he's kind of like looking at fundamentals, and he's doing a ton of stretching and kind of aerobatics. But he's not really hitting the pads anymore. But I would like the opportunity to, I'm not going to say spar, but at least hold the pads for him, I think would be fun.
I would love to see you spar him and have him just accidentally knock the wind out of you.
Yeah, well, I don't think, if he knocks the wind out of me, he's probably going to knock me out at the same time. So I don't think there's any in between.
Yeah, but it's a great photo. Let's definitely include that in the show notes. If you guys want to see it, Invest Like a Boss episode 116. You can see how tiny of a man Sam Marks looks compared to Big Bob Sapp.
Yeah, I do look like a really tiny human being. But just know, everybody, he is 6'8". I'm not that tiny.
No, he's 6'4", but he just looks 6'8" because he's giant and he's like 400 pounds.
I got to get stats on him. I've been telling everyone he's 6'7". I could be wrong.
Yeah,
we'll leave his scorecard or his whatever. You have like a fight card or something? We'll leave that in the show notes.
Yeah, oh, you know what? I'm mistaken. He's 6'5". 1.95 meters. Officially, he weighs 150 kg, 149 kg. He's a super heavyweight, but I'm pretty sure he walks around kind of more than that, yeah.
Yeah. He's just cleaning up all the sushi in Thailand. He just goes in these sushi buffets, and it's just there's nothing left after he goes in.
Yeah, what happens? Like when he walks in to a sushi buffet, are they charging him double? Because that'd be fair if they did.
I don't think so. He probably has like a circuit, you know, he does like 10 in a row or something, but doesn't go back to the same ones every night in a row.
Yes, because they would be out of business in a month. I like it.
Bob, if you're listening, thanks for coming on, man. Had a blast. We hope to see one more fight out of you, but if not, keep us posted on everything that you're doing. We'd love to get involved and definitely come out and support in any way we can.
Yeah, and I'm excited because it really seems like he has a good head on his shoulders because, I mean, he's not going to be able to fight forever. I think he's already, 45? Yeah, he's born in 73, so he's 45 years old now. You know, he's had a lot of kind of rough years. I mean, it's hard being a fighter. I mean, I only had six fights, and they weren't at his level. And my body feels so beat up, you know. And he's had, I don't even know how many, but a ton of fight. I think he's had...
Lots.
31. Looks like 31 kickboxing fights, 33 MMA fights. So that's 64 fights just there, and some other ones
that's
as well.
That's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot, especially for a heavyweight. And he also had college football, high school football, and wrestling. So that's a lot of physical pounding on your body.
Yeah. So I'm taking a look on YouTube right now. The couple big fights that you guys should watch of Bob. The Inosu Hoose fight was kind of a big famous one because Inosu Hoose is just a super famous kickboxer. A very interesting one. If you want to see Bob Sapp look small, he fought a guy named Hong Man Choi who is like, I want to say like 7 feet tall or something. This guy is, I mean, he literally has gigantism. So this is the first time ever. This guy is 2.2 meters tall, which is what? I mean, that's what, 6'8", 6'9"? That's 7'2".
Wow.
That was insane. Wow. He fought a guy named Kimo, which was the guy who in UFC 1 carried a 300-pound cross or something to the fight. Which was insane because I mean, it looked exhausting just carrying it during the walkout before the actual fight itself. He fought Miocco Kokrop, who is the Croatian, super kickboxer, and he almost fought Mike Tyson. Did you know that?
Yeah. Yeah. You can see that actually. You can see when Bob Sapp won one of his fights. I think it was that what was the guy's name you said? Kimbo? Keto? Okay. But he beat him, and Mike Tyson was in the audience, and then they started jawing at each other. It's pretty entertaining, actually.
Yeah, so it was like they almost fought, and they actually, fun fact, they were putting together a fight in Japan where it would have made hundreds of millions of dollars. And Mike Tyson was into it. Bob Sapp was obviously into it. They were going to fight, and the only reason why it did not go through, Mike Tyson's felony prevented him from fighting in Japan.
Wow.
Yeah, and that sucks.
Good info, Johnny.
Yeah, well, this Invest Like a Boss ends up being a good fighting and MMA history podcast as well.
I'm sure Mike Tyson can fight in Thailand, so maybe you and I try to set the fight up in Bangkok next summer.
I don't know. I think Mike Tyson is he's more of a philosopher and a comedian and a lover nowadays. Mike Tyson's a great example of someone else as well who had this huge career in fighting and you know, probably didn't save a ton of money. You know, I think most fighters don't. And I think this is kind of a good segue to the everyday man listening to this podcast is you might be thinking, this was a really entertaining episode, but what did it have to do with investing or finance? And it has everything to do with it because it's one of those, and I don't want to say like a warning story, but like every single person who comes into a lot of money, whether you sell a business, you're an entrepreneur, or you have, you know, some very, very good months of money coming in, if you don't save it and you don't, if you don't pivot, you're screwed. But if you're smart enough to save money while it's happening, to invest it, you know, because if you can invest $1 million when you're in your 20s and then just never invest anything else, you're still good because that's growing compound interest, you know, or if you can just stash away a little bit here and there, even, you know, or live cheaply, you know, kind of during the off time instead of just bottling out and blowing it all out. Or even if you didn't happen to do, you know, save it enough, as long as you can pivot into something else and use your skills, your brand, your knowledge into other ventures, then you'll be okay. But I feel so bad for the, you know, the probably thousands, if not, you know, hundreds of thousands of athletes that at one point made $1 million a year and are now working at a Walmart or something because they don't have other skills and they didn't save any money.
Got to develop those skills, save those dollars, and surround yourself with smart people and good advice. And listen to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
Yeah.
Show.
And if you like this episode, you like the Invest Like a Boss podcast, tell your friends, screenshot it, you know, leave a review. People find this podcast the more you guys review the show. So big, big thank you to everyone who's taken, you know, a few minutes to go to iTunes or wherever you listen and you guys leave a review. We now have 175 five-star reviews or close to five-star reviews. 4.999. So help us bring us up by putting a five-star review, guys.
Good stuff. Hey, Johnny, next week we have on Danny Moses. I don't know if you know that name, but he was one of the key figures in the movie The Big Short that the book was written on. And he's going to come on the show and we're going to talk about the movie, the insides of what it was like to be living through that whole those events, basically. And then we're going to talk about what he's betting on now.
Nice. That's going to be exciting. So definitely look forward. Stay subscribed to this podcast. And this week, I want to give a big shout out to Marlon Wayne. I've been listening for 2 months, and I put many of the strategies in motion. Thanks, Sam and Johnny. 5 stars. Great information. Thank you, Marion or Marlon. And we would love some more 2019 reviews on the iTunes store. So please open the iTunes app, click on it on your phone, wherever you're listening, take a minute, leave a 5-star review. That way more people find us, we can get more big name guests, and all of us can improve our finance and investing knowledge so we can all ball out in our retirement age. All right, enjoy Tampa, Sam. Enjoy that RA that you've been paying for and that's been sitting there on lease.
Yes, sir. Time to get out on the road tomorrow. Catch you guys all next week. Thanks, Johnny.
All right. See you guys. Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.